Good evening, good afternoon, good morning, or whenever you happen to be listening to this. Welcome to the Film Realist Podcast, the film and TV podcast from a complete nobody. That is hopefully for somebody. My name is Kyle Naranya, and welcome to episode 193, where on this week's episode of the show, I am going to be reviewing One Piece Into the Grand Line, the second season of the live-action adaptation of the beloved anime. As this is a full season review, full spoilers. You have been warned if you haven't had a chance to watch yet. No need to worry, time codes will be listed in the description should you feel the need to hop around. So when you finally had a chance, you can go to the full spoilers or maybe listen to listener mail first. Let's head into the Grand Line with One Piece Season 2.
There's gotta be some safer islands around here.
It doesn't seem like it. We're low on food and pretty much everything. This could be our last chance to stock up before we get into the Grand Line.
It is dangerous to enter the Grand Line underprepared, and we're not that far away. Maybe we could...
You're free for the first time in your life.
I reviewed the first season of One Piece back in 2023, which is insane. It's crazy what a writer's strike, an actor's strike, really does to any television production whatsoever. It wouldn't have been shocking if this show was 2 years apart, but three, I'm not going to lie, I had to watch a recap to remember exactly what had happened in the first season. 8 1-hours that was released on a Friday and had to be watched over 2 days so then I could record for that episode was a lot, not to mention there also was Ahsoka, the first 4 episodes in that episode, so this was nice. I only had to watch 1 season of television. If you didn't listen to that review, I highly recommend checking it out. But if you're not going to, just a little heads up, I have never watched a full episode of the anime. Being a millennial, I remember when the really bad 4K, not 4K, 4Kids dub came to North America, and I had no idea what was going on with the absurdity that was One Piece, and I never even finished an episode after the first episode, which I don't think I even got through. So my only exposure to One Piece is vague images online, and then the Netflix series. And I think this says a lot, because I do love a certain amount of anime shows. It is not a genre I get to spend a ton of my time in, given all of the stuff that is made over here in North America. But of course, growing up with Pokemon, Digimon, any version of Dragon Ball, and then seeing a select few of other series. Cowboy Bebop, ironically, also had a Netflix live-action adaptation that was not good. The funny part for me with this adaptation is it is in the same vein as a lot of other comic adaptations are, that being of North American comics or manga, which is you need to treat that world sincerely and doesn't necessarily need to be tongue-in-cheek. You need to be in the realistic way that this world works. And One Piece is absurd. The second season continues that absurdity, and it is so wildly entertaining. All of our main cast have really settled into their roles, which is really great, because this season, more so than the first, does feel succinctly like you are adapting issues or stories or volumes, depending however it's packaged, of manga, and then they build to an overall arc. And what's so compelling to me about this show is having never read it, nor having watched the anime, I'm having a really hard time, and this is a good thing, picking out what might be significantly condensed stories or a multitude of stories that have been smushed together into an episode of TV. Each episode really does function as an hour-long story, but does build out to an overall arc. And I didn't really know where the conclusion of this show was going to go. The first season, focusing on the arrival and the ensemble coming together and then coming to a close with the Straw Hats and they're fighting for, Nami's freedom from Arlong and his group was awesome. This season going into the Grand Line, there's momentum to this season. We know the One Piece is there, so this is a destination that is all around the Earth. And the One Piece could be here. We have the crew now on a finally shared mission after doing what they did in the first season. And as opposed to, and this was a big change that I was not suspecting, we have a whole new group of antagonists. The Marines are sort of there in the beginning, which was fascinating to me because they are obviously a significant focus in the first season, but in season 2/Into the Grand Line, and I'm curious if every season moving forward is going to be a subtitle instead of season 2, depending on, I guess, how long this show goes for. We do know that a third season is already on the way, which is fantastic. It should finish production, or at least filming, by June of this year. So fingers crossed, it's in at least a year, maybe 18 months, when we get season 3. But as opposed to the Marines, and of course, we had Smoker, who I reacted to in the trailer, was teased at the end of the first season. But he's much more in the background, which I really appreciate because it gives the focus of this season to our main bad organization, a group of antagonists, with the Baroque Work. And those characters are so fun because we get to see a complete antithesis to the Marines. We see an organization of just bad guys. And each of those characters is just as colorful, is just as notable, and they really make their mark in each episode. The whole mentality of people being named after days or numbers really sets in this group organization and the threat of Mr. Zero, who is obviously a character. Again, I'm watching this as a fan of just this show, so anytime there's a tease of a character, my curiosity is piqued because I don't know who it's going to be. Mr. Crocodile, what is his name? I have to look this up right now. Sir Crocodile was teased in the casting, but that means absolutely nothing to me. I am looking at this show purely as an observer of this show. And this show does need to work for both. That was clear with the first season, that the reception was positive from anime fans, from manga fans, as well as just brand new viewers. I consider myself now a fan of One Piece. It just happens to be in a smaller pie because the anime will go on till the end of time. But back to the actual construction and the Baroque workers. I really appreciate that each of the Baroque Work villains we see, for the most part, really do allow different characters to shine. And that has to be done well for the overall season to not feel like it's just the Luffy show and the rest of the crew. Each episode does focus on each character's strengths and weaknesses, specifically what they need to do to develop as a character if they are going to survive this absurdity that is looking for the One Piece. And this show is continuously insane. One element that I thought was great is this world appears to be able to do anything. And in a live-action adaptation of an anime, that can be really hard to do, and it not just feeling stupid. The cast, the production design, and the absurdity, and the investment of the actors, everybody is understanding this world, but not placating to, we know this is silly. A tongue-in-cheek narrative doesn't necessarily work, because it feels as if the people behind the scenes, or even the actors on screen, are making fun of the thing that they're in. You can't do that with this show. I love the Straw Hat crew. Each actor feels much more settled in their role in this show, whether that's because we've seen them older and more mature, but each character feels substantially more lived in. And I really appreciate that in this series because there has been so much time that has passed in the real world, and there's an element of these characters feel as if they're just woven together even more. The second season provides challenges for each of them, and I like that each character really is dealing with the aftermath of the previous season, specifically with Zoro and Mihawk, as he's such a great character that it would be annoying if he was not in the second season, but him being essentially the devil on the shoulder of Zoro, where that whole fight has determined where Zoro is going, and the entire motivation for him throughout the season is I just need to get better. And it allows for an opportunity like the fight where he has to kill/beat up 100 people. It is a little disappointing, and I understand why they didn't do it. It maybe would have been too much, but for the show, what really is too much? To have a counter where we see how many people he's dispatched, but that really does settle into who Zoro is, even though he is clearly connected and cares for the crew, he's dealing with his own stuff. The rest of the crew is really dealing with the main adventure as a whole. They don't individually get something that is from the remainder. We get to see more of Sanji's investment and care for Nami, which specifically in the first season does feel much more of like a romantic connection, but it really does feel in this season like true care for a beloved friend. Could that potentially grow into being something more? I'm not sure. Again, and don't tell me. I don't want to know. This is similar to Invincible. I'm not reading the comics. I'm watching the show in front of me. I know there are other things. If I wanted to know those spoilers, I would look into them. But that relationship was one I liked. Getting to see different pairings also makes gives the show another opportunity to show different dynamics. I like Sanji with Usopp, and I like Nami with Zoro, and then with Vivi in the show, we get an entirely different motivation for where she's going forward. And this crew, what makes them so special in this world in total, is they are not like any of the other pirates. Luffy has this goal in mind to be king of the pirates, but he is so different from all the other pirates that we know because of his good-heartedness. And that goes into all of the interactions he has throughout this season. His trust multiple times is betrayed because he is so willing to trust in others, and it results in a lot of problems that sprout up because of that. Whether that be the village they go to, and it is not one that is welcoming to pirates, but actually run by Baroque workers looking to kill them. And ultimately, this is what was interesting for me with the show, because my feeling was we're just going to kind of spin our wheels, which is not something you necessarily want out of a sophomore season of a show. You want there to be a driving point of the story. Of course, there's the one piece that is the whole reason the show exists. But the actual show's main focus and the main plot being getting Miss Wednesday, Princess Vivi, to her kingdom, and that really being the main story, was not something I necessarily suspected. And it does show how the show can introduce a character or pivot in a way that doesn't necessarily something that would be predictable. And it was not me by me whatsoever. She did seem at first initially just be a side character, another addition to the ensemble, but all with the show's direction, it really is, well, we are on this adventure, but we need to wind up with her kingdom. And that's something that I'm very curious about the show moving forward, because all of the dilemmas, all of the challenges throughout this season are because of the next island they go to and sort of finding how they're going to be getting to Alabaster, or Alabasta, the kingdom in which Vivi is the princess for. And all of the conflict after episode 4 really is because of that. And similar to the last season, and this is something that I hope is not what we get in season 3, is when we finally meet Chopper, who is an amazing character. I understand now why so many manga fans are absolutely obsessed with Chopper. And episode 7 functions entirely differently than the other 8 episodes of the season, which is, it is all of Chopper's backstory to help establish who this character is, regardless of how cute the character is designed and played. You need to know why this character's story is so important moving forward, and why Chopper is who he is. But King Wapol is a character that was introduced and winds up becoming the main antagonist for this season. We had multiple different Baroque people, but they were more episode by episode, although we had 2 episodes with certain people, with Mr. 3, Mr. 5, and Miss Valentine. In the middle of the season, the main antagonist, at least at the climax of this, was Mr. Wapol. He doesn't work, in my opinion, as being as menacing. There's something to the Devil Fruits being much more like the Kryptonite from Smallville so far in the show, And I know that this is because there were less of them in season one. They seemed special. And characters act in a way in which they are this incredibly rare thing. But in this season, we had Buggy, we had Wapple, we had Mr. 3, we had Mr. 5. I believe the guns in the head of Mr. 5 are just supposed to be, or not Mr. 5. I'm combining all of them in my head now. Mr. 9 are different than what, at least I don't believe, but I don't know. The logistics of the Devil Fruit become more and more main antagonists have to have them so that way Luffy cannot just be Mr. Fantastic. But the quieter moments of this show that aren't the absurdity are what I like so much about this. Whether that be when the characters are stuck inside of the whale or when they're just having quiet conversations about something about themselves. The back and forth is what makes this show entertaining. Sanji and Zoro going back and forth with who killed the T-Rex is really funny. I expected there to be a bigger T-Rex, but an island full of dinosaurs and the biggest giants I've ever seen in any fictional brand was ridiculous. And it's absurd that it works. None of this stuff should. And I commend everybody for making it work. There is so many things in this that would break any believability whatsoever, but for whatever reason, it just all does. One aspect that did confuse me slightly was that we get the name of, what is her name? There's a of Miss Sunday, who's Nico Robin, who has one of the most disgusting abilities from a devil fruit where limbs are just popping out of characters, who is much more of, I would say, a ghost throughout the season. Obviously, she's tangible and she exists. But that is a character that is just as scary as some of the other Mr., Mrs., and Mr. Numbers that we face. I don't necessarily know why the otter on the vulture shows up, if that's sent by Mr. Zero, but that was the most ridiculous thing that just sort of seems to be a thing that happens, so we have to have that. I'd be really curious with this show, has there been stuff that they've cut that people are mad about? Because overall, it doesn't really feel like that is the case. It does feel as if all of the main moments that you would expect from the manga or the anime have been adapted. I know there were a fair number of compilations that were made at the end of the first season comparing certain scenes to the anime. Iñaki, who plays Luffy, has said he's gone through the manga and the anime, and there are scenes based on what the stories are that he really does want to recreate. But why this show works and so many others don't is these characters, at least in this, is just, obviously you're listening to this for my opinion, don't feel as if they are impressions of the manga or the anime. It is their versions that feel faithful to the scripts that they are given that are obviously inspired by both of those things. It would be impossible for them not to be. This is not an original piece of work. It is a One Piece live action adaptation. And I love that these characters feel as if this is the live action version. It's not, this is an actor who's saying lines of dialogue that are exactly the same as the anime. And that's one of the reasons that Cowboy Bebop didn't really work for me. I love that anime. It's probably my favorite anime of all time. That may be considered basic, but I love it so much. And while that was cast really well, it didn't allow the characters to feel as if they were there living and breathing versions of those characters. It was, I've got to do what the anime did because that's the thing that worked. Those shows don't work when you do this. Movies don't work when you do this. Anime is one of the most difficult mediums to adapt into live action. What's so fun about this show, while the characters are really great, the action is just as insane. We get a ton of wire work, which you would have to do, and all of the actors are so good at what they need to do for these characters, whether that be Sanji and his kicks and so many spins, or Zoro and the swords. That fight in the Western town is unreal. And it really, really does feel like things are just escalating and escalating. And I'm glad it doesn't feel like this insane oneer, because while those are really cool, I do feel like that element of fight choreography, as well as editing, is been played out, unless there is a new way that I can't even comprehend that hasn't been done yet with a oneer, which is an action sequence that allegedly has no takes. I'm glad we got something different. The wire work is fun. All of the different devil fruits that have been eaten by the different villains of the season are really fun because they are all so inherently different. They're so weird, and it allows the characters to have different fighting styles, whether that be Mr. Five and his boogers, or we get Mr. Nine and his bullet hair, or we get, no, not Mr. Nine. I'm confusing all of them together. No, it is Mr. Nine, or Mr. Three. David Dalsmachin is just a perfect David Dalsmachin on screen. Nobody could do that better than him. Or we get Mrs. Sunday, and her abilities are funny, as well as, I can't even remember now who the baseball miss is, but she's insane as well. And Smoker, I know people were incredibly excited for him at the end of season one, but as an antagonist from the Marine side of things, I'm really looking forward to seeing what is the next fight with him like. So far, this season does a great job of building up two main antagonists for the Straw Hats moving forward. We have Smoker, and we have Sir Crocodile, or Mr. Zero. Those characters clearly are important to the show, and I know I'm somebody who's only watching this show as this version, so those characters feel like they need to have some sort of conflict with Straw Hats in person. We, of course, did get one from Smoker, but I am very curious to seeing, does Mr. Zero, Sir Crocodile, have to get his hands dirty, or is it going to be one of those characters who sits back for longer? Obviously, Joe Manganiello is that character, and people are excited for that. As the guy behind the scenes in the shadows, that character does really work. The conversation he has with Sanji is fantastic, really building in the menace of that character. But similar to Thanos, eventually that character is going to have to get off the chair, and fine, he'll do things himself. Overall, this is a really successful second season. It builds on everything I liked about the first season and changes things so the overall structure isn't exactly the same. I have, of course, explained some of the structure that I found a little too similar, but overall, I really enjoyed this season. It was so easy to watch, and it is so much fun to do this. I really enjoy watching this show, and I can't wait for season 3. Did you watch One Piece Into the Grand Line? Make sure to let me know in the comments. And if there's an anime that you think could be adapted like this that hasn't been done yet, make sure to let me know in the comments. That will do it for my One Piece Into the Grand Line spoiler review. Now let's jump to listener mail and question of the week responses.
Can I ask you a question?
Just one?
There's something I've been meaning to ask you.
I ask the questions, you answer the questions.
Why do you ask questions to which you already know the answers?
Did that count as a question?
Yes.
Damn it.
Last week's question of the week was, what anime do you think needs a live-action adaptation? I believe it's LLLLL or III on TikTok said Bleach. Void_Galaxy said Kaiju Number 8. Panda Blitz said Wolf's Rain. The Goat said Naruto. And then on YouTube, AD Samano 7873 said 86. Marithi _Manu 9241 said Hunter x Hunter. That one I've actually heard of. Dylan Pollock, what anime do I want to see in live action? Well, they technically did it already, but it was shoddy and way too condensed. So I'm going to say it again. Yu Yu Hakusho is so good and such a great dynamic between our four leads. With the best tournament arc in all of anime, that is a statement, my goodness, Dylan. I'd also gladly watch a live-action Attack on Titan, though that seems very unlikely. Okay. Keen Machine! Keen! How are you doing? I hope you're doing well. Violet Evergarden is my fave, and I'd love to see it done well as a live action. If only so more people could be aware of it. Keen, I've never heard of that. I hope you're doing well. That's not the biggest anime fan. I'm not a diehard of the genre. I know a lot of people are, given how a bunch of these animes I've never even heard of. And then Scotty Cameron writes in, the books where the Universal Monsters originated from are so old, they probably predate copyright law. Even if there was a copyright on them, it's long expired because it's been well over 90 years since Bram Stoker wrote Dracula and Mary Shelley wrote Frankenstein. Yes, of course, that's true. I am curious to know what Kyle thought of The Bride since he ended reviewing Hoppers. It's bad. I think it's kind of a mess, Scotty, and it's unfortunate because I was really looking forward to it. And then to the question of the week. An anime I'd like to see in live action is The Boondocks. Its lampooning of American society feels more relevant than ever when the anime aired. Is The Boondocks technically an anime? Because I've seen that show. Does that qualify? Well, according to this, it says it's an American, or not American, it is an American adult animated sitcom. So, Scotty, I don't know if that qualifies, although it is based on a comic strip line from when? When was this published? Because this is the biggest controversy of all with the as genre in general, because, of course, you have shows that were obviously inspired, such as Avatar The Last Airbender, The Legend of Korra, and that whole universe as a whole. I am fully aware that is not an anime, because it was made in America and has no manga inspiration or video game inspiration. I think my answer, it's boring, but I would really love to see a live-action version of Pokemon Red or Blue. They did a great adaptation of the game into a manga where it was a lot more vicious and felt significantly more tangible to what the reality of that world would be. I know we got Detective Pikachu, but after stuff like Sonic, which I like the Sonic movies, you can check out my review for Sonic 3, I would like to see that. It's funny that that's not something that we get, which is kind of annoying. But that'll be that for this week's question, or last week's question of the week. On to next week's question of the week. What is a science fiction novel that you think deserves a big screen adaptation? This is, of course, inspired by next week's review, which will be of Project Hail Mary. I'm so excited for this film. Phil Lord and Chris Miller, a novel written by Andy Weir, a script written by Drew Goddard, starring Ryan Gosling. All of these things are on what would Kyle love the most Venn diagram for anything in Hollywood. So that'll be next week's episode. But I can say, and I'm very excited about this, this will not be the only episode of the podcast this week. Make sure you are subscribed because you don't want to miss another special bonus episode of the podcast where I'm going to be giving my thoughts on Invincible Season 4. So there will be no spoilers. It will all be spoiler-free. So look forward to that episode as well as next week's episode, which is Project Hail Mary. Thank you so much to everybody for listening to the Film Realist podcast. If you have not yet, please follow on your favorite podcast platform. Leave a 5-star rating if you are listening on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. And I implore our YouTube listeners to subscribe. We are so close to 500 subscribers. It would be amazing to hit that milestone before episode 200. And if you've gotten this far, this is the last thing. What would you like to see / hear from the 200th episode of the podcast? Of course, there's going to be a feature film review. You can kind of do the math as to when that's going to be coming out. But I would like to know from our amazing listeners, what do you want to see for that episode? If people want to send in their favorite moments, that would be awesome. Or if they have questions, maybe what led to the Film Realist podcast. I just want to hear from the listeners. What do you want the celebration of 200 episodes to be? I'm so grateful to everybody who listens to this, who wants to know what I think about movies and TV, or see my ridiculous reactions when I watch trailers. That's available on all the social media platforms. I feel so lucky to be doing this. It's a hobby of mine that I absolutely adore. So thank you to everybody who spent time listening to me whenever, whether that be an evening, a morning, or an afternoon. Thank you so much for listening to the Film Realist podcast. I'll see you next week. My name is Kyle Naranya, and I'll see you next week.